Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the Universe podcast. I'm your host Theo, here with my co-host Ellie.
Hello.
And our guest Elizabeth.
Hello.
Elizabeth, you've been on the show before, but would you still like to introduce yourself?
Of course. I'm Elizabeth, I'm 20 years old and I'm studying English at the University of Vienna, and I really like writing.
As you should. We're going to start with the reading today, as always, and you brought us a poem called An Ode to Fear, right?
I did. All right, here we go. An Ode to Fear. Succumbing to slumber, I feel your hand on my face. Gentle and happy, I slowly grow number. Number from happiness? That can't be right. I have everything I need close to me and in sight. As I close my eyes, I remember that I am happy. Remember that you still stay lying next to me. Precisely that is what I see, you lying next to me. Precisely that is what I fear, you no longer needing me. For it's my fear that we are finite. We don't seem to be, nor do we have to be, but alas, the possibility is as finite as we. We as in humans and not we as this unit. You don't feel it on a warm spring day, hair flying in the wind while laughing your worries away. Until walking home, gifting Sam of Instagram too much attention, doing this with no malicious intention, mistaking red for green and green for red, now lying in a hospital bed, unresponsive, realizing this. This being exactly what I fear with you. For Sam of Instagram might not be your future muse, but what if you mistake green for red and see it as truth? You say I'm as cool as the backside of a pillow. I know you are right, yet my face resembles the winter wrath of a weeping willow, always weeping, possessed by fright.
Thank you.
There's a lot of imagery in there, and I want to know whether there is any specific occasion when you came up with this, or was it just a general feeling?
I was actually in the tram, and it was really full, and I got very annoyed. And that's usually always on public transport is when I come up with like my ideas. And it was just, I don't know, I happened to be on Instagram, which is kind of where the line came home when walking home, being on Instagram. And I don't know, it just kind of hit me. And I wrote down the first, or the middle lines, like lines 17 to 20, in the tram on my phone. And then I just elaborated it and kind of made it into a more chronological story.
Is that what you mean by Sam of Instagram? Is this just a metaphor for like just anybody on Instagram?
Yeah, it just means because I find a lot of people when they're on Instagram, sometimes you go into this really dangerous pattern of stalking a person, and you stalk the next person, and you stalk the next person, and eventually you're looking at their aunt's Barbara's, I don't know, Barcelona trip from 2012 or something, you know, and it's just this constant cycle.
Totally relatable.
Yeah, and that was kind of, I liked Sam because it rhymes with Instagram. So okay. I just felt like it would be really like a nice assonance in between the sentence, like Sam of Instagram.
Yeah.
It's like a catch.
Or could it also be like a criticism on our generation?
A little bit.
Yeah. Like we're not appreciating the time that we have with our loved ones.
Definitely.
And spending time more in like social media.
I feel like this is a very sad and morbid thing to say, but I feel like the possibility of somebody getting run over by a car because they're looking at their phone is, I mean, that has to happen often, you know?
Like, it does, I think so.
Yeah, and this is where the traffic light imagery comes in, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it starts off as being literal because you mistake red for green. So you think, okay, you don't really realize that you shouldn't be walking and it's red and you can't walk and you think it's fine. And then it kind of has the metaphorical aspect of like green for red, and so that you mistake the bad for the good.
I was actually gonna ask about that color.
That makes sense. And that's how you end up in the hospital bed.
Now it's clear. Because before just talking about, we were just wondering what the hospital bed was about. Because I was thinking when you referred to us being finite, I was feeling like, is this a fear of separation, the fear of death? Because we're human and we're going to be separated, like we're going to die at some point, we're going to have to be separated. So is it more like a breakup fear or...
Both. It plays on both. I mean, essentially, it plays on like the breakup fear, I guess you can call it that, if that's what it is. And I compare humans being finite, meaning mortal, that we can, like, as finite as, let's say, I don't know, a relationship to a person could be. And I kind of compare the two and said, the possibility, like, we're people don't have to be, but the possibility is as mortal as humans, and that it only takes a second to get run over by a car and get killed.
That's why I associated with the hospital bed to that, because of, like, the separation from the death, and we're going to realize that in our hospital beds, and thinking, like, yeah.
I'm sorry, it's so morbid.
No problem.
That's what poetry is about.
Yeah, we like it morbid here. I was, regarding the social media, do you think, you know, there's all this fear of loss in relationship in this poem. Do you think social media makes this worse?
Definitely. I think so. Because I think everyone can relate to this. I don't see myself as being too social media obsessed. I have my moments where I'm like, okay, maybe I need to chill and I need to step away, as I think everyone does. And of course, it's kind of when you look, you always want to look what's going on, who's talking to whom, what's happening, you know what I mean? And there were so many unnecessary negative feelings that I had throughout the last couple of years that were purely based off of the fact that I was on a stupid app, and I saw, okay, this somebody commented on this person's picture. Does that mean that they're dating, or does this mean that, oh no, and you know, they don't, you know, they're unresponsive to me. Does that mean they don't like me? It's just, it's so toxic, and I feel like
it's very exhausting.
Yeah. Sometimes feels like more information about other people than we're supposed to have. I wonder what that must have been like when there wasn't anything like social media. Not saying that social media in general is bad, but it definitely has its bad sides.
Yeah, it has a side that keeps you obsessed with it, and it's getting toxic, more and more toxic. And I don't think you need that much information about other people.
Of course not.
But you can't pull yourself out of that, because now it's become a part of our lives. So, yeah.
Not being a part of that would also be damaging to your social life, I think. You'd be missing out on a lot of things. I mean, sure, you wouldn't have some of the bad things, but also you wouldn't have any of the good things. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. But it's also one of those things with information, the more you have, the more you want. So you can't help it. And if you see this, it's like, okay, well, how much more can I fish out? How much more can I find? And that's just a really, really fast and toxic, you know, way to be really unhappy. So
you don't even realize it until you're really in it, I guess.
Yeah. And then you're in too deep. You begin the poem with saying that actually you've got every reason to be happy, or at least you say that you're happy in this state, but still you're afraid, you're still not 100% there in, I don't know, 100% satisfaction state. Is that something you struggle with? Because we talked about that before, and we also said...
We said that there's always this side of you that, like, you just have this, like, happy thoughts and everything, and then all of a sudden you're, like, bombarded with anxious thoughts, and every time I'm like, yeah, after I worry about this thing, I'm not going to worry about anything else, because, like, I'm going to solve it and everything's going to be fine. And then there's always this next thought that brings more worry and anxiousness and stuff. And we were just thinking about that, because you start off really happy and then all of a sudden you're like, what if we break up, or what if we die, or what if we are not forever?
Yeah, honestly, that's just the essence of me as a person. I can't, it's very hard to achieve, because it's one of those things also with happiness, is once you achieve a certain level of happiness, then you can't be happy, because you're scared it's going to get taken away, whatever the source of happiness may be. So let's say your biggest goal in life is to, I don't know, pass this exam. Right now, what's going to make me happy is if I pass this exam. And then you pass this exam and it's like, well, I'm going to have another exam in 5 months, and what if I fail that one? And then that's a really temporary happiness. And it goes the same, I think, with everything. You're happy with something and you're scared, okay, but what if this gets taken away? It can't be forever, you know. And it just, you get anxious thinking, what if this is not gonna last? You know, this feeling of wherever this happiness comes from. And so it's definitely...
I feel like it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
So it's never ending.
And it's also, I have the craziest fear of death. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know anybody who's is afraid of death as much as I am. It's probably unhealthy. but I'm that person that would say, oh, I'd live forever. And everyone tells me you're stupid. Like, you would really want to live forever. And I would not hesitate to say no, because it's just like the fear of death is just so crazy. Mm-hmm. So I always incorporate death for some reason, because obviously it's one of the things that
always at the back.
I was at the back.
Yeah, and here in the poem is also there, kind of looming in the background over all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you think on the one hand that the knowledge that everything is going to end anyway might diminish the fear of more temporary loss, but here in this poem it's more, it's
make the most of it, sort of.
No, it's exactly the other way around, kind of. It's still, like, you know, everything is going to end, but still in this poem you were still worrying about the smaller things that might end, despite it all.
It's very negative again, I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to
bother this. We actually talked about that before, and we said that in general the tone of the poem is quite upbeat, except for the last couple of lines.
Like, and then it leaves us with this sad feeling. Was that intended, or...?
Definitely. I think that I talked about this at the Creative Writing Society meeting last week when I read the poem. When a couple people didn't really understand the last couple of lines, the Weeping Willow reference, and, you know. And I think what I meant with that is Weeping Willow generally is a tree that always looks sad, no matter how beautiful it is outside or how... It's always just kind of like bent over, and it's just, you know, it just doesn't look happy. That's why it's called the Weeping Willow, because it looks like it's always weeping.
Yeah.
And I'm a person, I cry very easily. Like, I might just start crying now. I'm not even sad, but I cry very easily. The second anyone raises their voice at me in the slightest bit, I will burst into tears. And so I kind of relate to that, because I'm not always sad, but I'm just always crying, even if it's a happy cry or anything. And so I kind of related myself to the tree that I'm just always very weepy.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not necessarily a weepy in a bad way, anyway. Because the feeling it leaves us with, despite the subject matter, most of the poem is actually written in a quite upbeat tone. And then we get to the last couple of lines, and it says, "Yet my face resembles the winter wrath of a weeping willow, always weeping, possessed by fright." And I'm just, well, a bit floored right now.
I also got the same idea. Like, it's there's like this big shift from being happy and blissful and all that, and then right in the end, you're like, I'm weeping, and, you know, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, because the last couple of lines are in one stanza together. You say, I'm as cool as the backside of a pillow, and then until possessed by fright, that's all one stanza. So there's a lot of, it's a very different kinds of feeling together in one stanza, right?
Definitely. I think also it's just very, it's just painting a picture of exactly what I feel. Of course, poetry is always supposed to be a little bit more dramatic. It's really not that dramatic in real life. But again, to the Weeping Willow thing, it's always kind of sad. And the Winter Wrath thing kind of is supposed to be a little reference to many things. I'm super pale. I mean, I'm very, very, very pale skinned. So I always look like, I don't know, a little wintery and, like, you know, just cold in general, even though I'm not, but it's just my complexion is very cold. And I feel like the Weeping Willow, the trees or the branches of that tree are very, very fine, and they're very, just any wind or any sort of thing, the tree will just start flowing around. You know, it's not like some kind of big oak tree that just... And so I think that personifying the tree, like, the tree is always scared of the winter because it's cold and it's gonna, like, fly around and just be out of control. And so I kind of compared myself to the tree, as in I'm very winter-esque because I'm very pale and a little frail sometimes and a little weak, and the tree's always weeping because it always looks sad, and I'm very weepy, and the tree's always scared of the winter and scared of all of this thing, and I'm constantly in a state of kind of anxiety and fear because of the reasons or the topics.
The wind will destroy that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, so it's like I'm the Weeping Willow almost. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm weeping,
yeah. And it's a very personal stanza then.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Very personal.
Yeah.
It moves with the slightest gust of wind. Everything can influence it. But then again, When I think of the weeping willow, don't weeping willows have a really thick trunk also that would be hard to cut down or anything? So, I don't know, maybe it's your, despite all the emotions you show on the outside, despite how easy you are to move, you're still very thoroughly grounded.
I'd like to think so.
It's a good image.
That's a really good analogy.
Thank you.
Did you write the poem specifically for somebody, with somebody in mind, except for yourself, of course? Did you intend to read it to somebody, or was that just for you to process your own feelings?
I mean, there was definitely somebody in mind, but it's mostly for me. I mean, I've shared the poem with friends and to the whole creative writing society. Yeah.
Have you shared with the person you had in mind?
No.
Okay.
I don't think I'm going to.
Yeah.
It's just a lot.
It is a lot. I can relate to that. Some poems are just a lot.
Yeah.
a lot of the poems are a lot.
Yeah.
I promise I'm not this dramatic. I promise, like, I'm not.
I can totally relate. Like, every time the universe meets my poems, are they always make a pun out of them because they always come off really dramatic and I don't know. But that is what poetry is about, I guess. So that's what we need to process.
Yeah.
We need to be dramatic at one point so that we can get them out. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not here for the drama. I just like poetry.
Well,
this is about my cat. Come on now, it's not about you.
I said before how I feel that most of the poem actually has quite an upbeat tone, but also it's quite vulnerable in a way. It talks about things that you wouldn't usually talk about with just anyone on the street. Tell them, hey, are you afraid of death? Because I sure am.
I mean, honestly, it is. It's very, very personal, very vulnerable. Because, you know, it's, I think also, maybe it's just me, but the weirdest, most vulnerable thoughts usually come spontaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I was in the tram and I walked over and I was like, what if I got run over by a car 2 seconds ago? You know what I mean? Just like the randomest. It's kind of like, do you guys know, I don't know if maybe I'm just insane, but if you go to like the Donau or something, or to any body of water, or at the beach, and you have your phone in your hand, and you're like,
it'll drop. Yeah.
Not even it'll drop, but you're just like, what if I just throw my phone in there?
Yeah. Yeah, but I have those. I'm not entirely sure if this is applicable, because I know this is like a psychologist terms, and you should always be careful with them if you're a layperson. But I think they're intrusive thoughts, basically. Like, if you're standing in high places and you're like, what if I just jumped? Or if you're standing at the fast flowing river, what if I just let myself fall in there and be carried away? Yeah.
So those that exist, like, in the medical
field. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. The best is laundry when I'm holding bleach in my hand. It's like, what if I just drink this? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like...
I could.
Yeah, I could.
But I won't do it.
Yeah. Like, I could kill myself in 2 seconds right now.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the weirdest thing. And so it was also one of those things. Like, you know, the traffic was fast and the tram was barely moving. And it's like, you know, what if I just get out and just run? And just have like the first truck.
Being really close to death at any time during the day, even in your regular days. So that maybe it like sort of enhances that fear.
Yeah.
Anything can literally happen. So
I think in order to exist without going completely insane, you have to ignore how close you are to death most of the time. Because if you always were thinking about, I mean, there are people who are always thinking about this, about all the germs on their skin and everything that could kill them at any given moment in time, you'd go completely mad.
Yeah, you should just trust in the fact that so many people made it until they are like, I don't know, 80s, 90s.
Yeah, but I mean, that doesn't help, because humans are really bad with statistics, or anything, like, our brain's not built to, like, to gorge quantitative evidence. That's not what we do.
I mean, obviously, but there are at least somebody out there who didn't, like, who got past all of those, like, chances of death or possibilities of death. Like, they survive, we survive every day.
Hey, my great grandma, she was born in Soviet Russia and had nothing to eat her whole life, and she made it till 91.
So you never know.
It's so crazy what happens to old people. Like, my grandma grew up sleeping on hay bales, having, like, sleeping almost on the floor and having almost nothing to eat. And now she lives in her own flat and has enough to eat and tons of kids and tons of family. It's so weird how much things have changed for old people. And then I think about our lives and how much might change in our lives.
What if we end up sleeping on hay?
Yeah, that's what I think. Because for your grandparents, like, it changed for the better, kind of.
Yeah.
And for us, I'm not sure. Like, thinking about how the world is going, like, with all of these political situations.
I feel like we were born so privileged.
Yeah.
Compared to our parents and our grandparents, we were born so much more privileged than them. So I feel like it can only go downhill.
Really. Yeah.
Let's hope it doesn't.
Hopefully not.
Yeah. We've already been talking about our general situation in life and feelings with thoughts and the future. Is writing a big part for you in that? Something that helps you deal with that?
Definitely. I feel like if I couldn't write some of this stuff down, then I'd definitely go crazy. I don't know if there's a condition for this, but there must be some kind of condition for thinking way too much and talking way too much. And I think I have to have that. And I can't stop thinking, like, about anything. It doesn't have to be bad. It can be good. But, you know, just one train of thought and the other train of thought and the other train of thought and the other train of thought. And my mom always told me, she's like, why don't you have smoke coming out of your ears? I'm like, because some of the things or explanations that I would give her for the tiniest things, if something made me nervous or something made me uncomfortable, even if something made me happy, and I would explain to her the trains of thought that got me to emotion XYZ, she would look at me and just, how does this even happen in somebody's brain that it just goes like that? And if I couldn't write some of the stuff down, it would be crazy.
Mm.
I think it really does help find, like, gather your thoughts and just, like, structure some things in your head.
Or even just get it out. Sometimes
to get rid of them.
If a person's upset me or I'm confused with my situation with a person or with a friend or something, sometimes I'll just write, like, a letter expressing all of my feelings, all of my thoughts, even arguing, calling them bad names.
That's good.
Then once I write that, I'll just sometimes just write it on my phone.
Maybe I should try that too.
And then sometimes you just feel better. You don't have the need to even talk to them anymore. It's like, okay, you know, if somebody's being maybe not so nice to you or ignoring you and you feel like you can't, or maybe you've done something to upset them, but you aren't really in the position to talk to them about it. I write usually like a little letter in the form of a text message, because, I mean, come on. We're not in the 19th century. So I'd write like a, hey, so I just wanted to talk about blah, blah, blah. And I write this really long message that makes no sense, that has no, you know, structure, no points that, you know, connect. And then I put it away and I don't think about it as much.
Yeah. That's interesting. So it doesn't always have to be in the form of art, but you can also use writing as, like, for, you know, to just, like, get it out and feel better. So writing is good for just for that.
But of course, I'm very creative, so I like, you know, it's not as much. Of course, I could write, oh wow, I'm so scared. One day I'm gonna die. I'm sad and crying all the time. You know, like, you can do that too. But I mean.
Yeah. You have to package it a little bit. Make it a bit prettier.
Of course.
Yeah.
You'll look a little less crazy as well. Mm. It's all for the art. It's all for the art.
Yeah.
Have you been writing for a long time?
I've been writing since I was a little kid.
Okay.
The first poem I can remember, it was about death. Shocker. I'm so sorry. It must have been 8. I wrote about this bumblebee that gets killed by something. I think it was by a human. I don't remember. All I remember was it was about a bumblebee, and he was collecting pollen, and then he died.
That's nice.
And I think I wrote this, I remember, after a piano lesson I had when I was 8 years old. So I was 8, I think. What I can remember, at least, of course, always maybe like little stories here and there. And then my mom was actually the one who told me that, oh wow, you tell stories really nicely. So I thought, okay, apparently I'm not terrible at it, and mm-hmm. I just kind of kept doing it. I would write horror stories. I loved writing horror stories.
Yeah, actually, I started with that.
Mm.
Yeah, like murders and people disappearing and mm-hmm. just really weird stuff. And then, in the sixth grade, I will never forget this, we had this little Japanese teacher. God, she was a piece of work. And she always had her favorites in the class. And if you weren't in those three, then you were really stupid. And I always felt like I was trying to prove, oh, I'm smart, and I can do this, and I have potential. And she would just always kind of ignore me, and just, you could kind of tell I was not on her radar whatsoever. She didn't dislike me, but I think indifference is worse than someone hating you, like when they're just indifferent towards you. And that's how she was. And I just felt so horrible. And then for the first time at our school, we started doing creative writing. And she said, okay, just write your story and whatever. And I wrote this story about this guy taking a girl on a date. It doesn't matter what it was about. And she said she's going to read out some of the best stories. And she didn't pick my story. And I thought my story was quite good. Like, I didn't see why I didn't deserve to be read out. So I asked her for constructive feedback. Okay, why didn't you read my story? I was 11 years old at the time, but I wanted, okay, maybe there was...
an explanation.
Yeah, you know, maybe your grammar was off, or maybe, you know, you could structure it better. I don't know, like actual... And I remember she said to me, I said, why did you pick this person's story over mine? And she said, well, you have to understand with writing and creative things, some people just have more talent than others.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. That's not...
I remember I looked at her and I was like, you are wrong. Like, this is not okay. And I guess that just really kind of, I don't know what it did to me, but ever since then, I was just writing like a crazy person. I remember I asked my mom to buy me a notebook and I started writing a book. I was like, I'm going to write a book. I wrote a book about my move because I moved from New York to Canada, and it was in Canada where this happened. So I wrote about my move and this, like, you know, very junior high school type story, you know, having a crush on, you know, the guy sitting across from me, and we shared a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and just really juvenile, right? Kind of like Judy Blume type of writing, but I was 11, so it's fine.
It's fine. It's pretty early. I mean, it's still a great thing to write a book at that age.
Yeah, and I remember I filled almost all the pages, and I'm sure it wasn't that good, but it left a little mark, and ever since then, I just never really stopped.
Mm-hmm. So you basically started more with, like, stories and prose rather than poetry.
Yeah, yeah. Prose was always my thing because I feel like it's a lot easier to get out a lot in prose because you don't have to be so... And I liked writing just little stories, short stories. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't as much commitment to writing a book.
Yeah.
The first long thing that I wrote was this fan fiction. When I was 16, I wrote on a Wattpad, and it actually had a really big audience. A bunch of people really liked it. And
which fandom?
It was about a band.
Uh-huh.
It was a band fandom.
Okay.
Which band?
Oh, you're asking personal questions here. I wanted to share this on my Facebook.
Right. Yeah, you have just the right to stay silent.
No comment. And it was just... I mean, it was an alternative universe fanfiction, meaning it, you know, wasn't... I just used their names. For anyone who doesn't know what that means, you use the names and the look of a character. So if I were to write a fanfiction about Leo, he'd be called Leo and would look like Leo, but he wouldn't, you know, be Leo studying English. He could be Leo the rock star in a leather jacket. You know, just completely different, you know.
That is very different.
You know, and I did that, and I feel like people always gave me such a hard time for writing that, but I felt like if you change the name, you would never know that it was connected to a band. Or if you say, okay, he has black hair instead of blonde hair, and then change his name, it was a completely original story. So
the attitudes of people towards fan fiction are so weird. Like,
I agree.
Especially professional authors, they often say that, you know, it's stolen work because you took my world and you're not putting the work in, so it's not real writing. But I don't know, I mean, what kind of small conception of writing do you have if that's not real writing? I don't know. Of course it's a different thing if people are really taking a lot of your work and then making money off of it, but that's for copyright reasons. That's not an artistic criticism.
I agree. especially not to be, you know, shady, but I've read so many fan fictions that were based off of, you know, maybe a movie or a TV show or even a book that were better written than, like, you could tell the writer had way more talent than the original author.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more like an inspiration.
Yeah.
Right?
And also
rather than copying.
Yeah. Recycling stories and people and worlds is something deeply human. That's something we've been doing for ages. If you read the Bible, you've got tons of stuff in there. And still we don't say, that's not art. I mean, we also don't say that the Bible is art, but I would know, people probably don't say that the Bible is crap because it recycled stories of people who told stories before. That's just not how this works.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah, I get a bit flustered up about these things.
No, I'm 100% on your side. And I think it's such a, even if you're not, for me, because I wrote about bands, so it wasn't about, I wasn't taking like a canon piece of literature and creating something new. I was creating something completely new because I was just taking a person and putting them into my story because I liked the way that this person looked or, you know, just...
So the same thing as that you were inspired by that.
Yeah, so I said, I want you to be, you know, in my story. And I created a completely original story. Until this day, I get people who make fun of me for it and I don't understand why, because it's a completely original story. And if you were to change the names and just put, I don't know, some random name like Bob Miller or something, it's a completely original story that no one's ever read before.
And aren't there already published work that are fan fiction of like other texts or books or whatever?
Yeah.
So there are actually, yeah, a lot of things like that out there. So if it's copying, then how would that work?
Mm. I mean, yeah, like stuff like 50 Shades of Grey, but that's also there. Like, it hardly resembles any of the, you know, any of what the original source text was. So yeah, you also, I don't think you could make copyright claims on that. Most people don't even know that it's fan fiction.
Yeah, I didn't know that actually. I just found out like this year or something.
Yeah.
Somebody told me, and I was like really shocked. Really, is that from Twilight?
I mean, were you really that shocked?
Not that shocked. I'm like, yeah, I know, I see the
connection. I feel like they took Twilight and just made it cheesier and more
funky. True.
One more thing about fanfiction. I think it's a great way to get young people to start writing. Having their favorite books, having their favorite TV show, band, whatever. And then they just, oh, let me write a story about that. And I think it's such a great way to get people to start writing without feeling, okay, I have a blank page, I don't know how to start, I don't even know. You know, have nothing to inspire me, and you have something to kind of give you a push. I think it's great.
Yeah.
So I think so.
And I mean, also like relating to art, that isn't that also how many great, like the great masters of painting and many great songwriters, what they started out with, they just copied everything they found good about other people's work until finally one day they developed their own style. Still, their own style might be like gobbled up together from everything that they read before. So I think that's perfectly balanced to do.
Yeah, I feel like everything we write, even if they're not fan fiction of stuff, or if they're like, we don't consciously think that we're inspired by one thing, but I feel like everything that we write is already based on what we have sort of read or have seen so far. We can't like completely come up with a story that is so like apart from everything that we've seen. We have a collective thing in our mind that like made out of everything that we've already seen
of course
read. So that's why I think it's like similar to being inspired.
You said that you wrote this on the tram. Is that what often happens for you? That you get inspiration while you're out and about.
Definitely.
From the outer world?
Yeah. Just momentary things are what inspire me. I don't have this one thing that I'm like, oh wow, this is inspo. It just kind of happens in the moment. It sounds a little narcissistic, but I don't mean it this way. I inspire myself a lot, but I don't mean it because
you said you have a lot of thoughts.
Yeah. Sometimes, oh wow, I think I'm so amazing, let me write a story about myself. I mean, it's kind of like, I'll think something or I'll see something from my point of view, or I'll witness something, and the feelings or the thoughts that I have with that usually inspire something. The amount of self-deprecating texts that are hidden in my laptop.
It really is a treasure chest, your files. Yeah. Also, I probably have this archive, and I probably would never, there's nobody I'd ever let into this archive and just let them roam freely there and just read it all up, because I decide what to share and what not to share.
Me too.
So, yeah, thank you for sharing this, for bringing this from the depths of your laptop to us.
Thank you for having me.
Is there any place you would like to plug?
The fanfiction I mentioned is still online. And it's also the same place where I published my story M&M, which I've shared at the Creative Writing Society. And it's on Wattpad, my Wattpad account, the home of fanfiction.
I think I quickly checked it before this session. It seemed really interesting. I'm going to read your stuff on there.
M&M?
You had some others. I think you had one. It wasn't called M&M, but it was called Two Brothers. To opposite brothers or something.
M&M.
Yeah, that's yeah. The same. Yeah, I assume so because of the
yeah
the because I know the content.
Yeah.
But yeah, and two other stories.
One story I never started. I liked the idea of it, and then the cover for some reason is still up. I started it in 2014, and I said I would only start it once I was almost finished with the one before that, but I never got almost finished. Unfortunately, it's unfinished. The story it will never be finished. Who knows? Maybe I'll finish it, but. But it's called Illusion, which is my fanfic. I wrote when I was 16, so it's very outdated. It gets better as you go along. You can tell that there was definitely an evolution in writing because it started off. Yeah, it started off a little eh, and then it got a little better and a little better. I mean, it's still a little eh because I stopped when I was about 18. That one. So it obviously isn't my best work, but it's there if anyone's interested.
It's nice to see your own progress and other. Also nice for other people to see, especially when you're an inspiring writer to yourself, seeing how other people did and how they progressed.
Definitely. Yeah.
So I'll put that in the show notes as usually. Ellie, is there any place where people can find you online?
Well, yeah, I have an Instagram page where I discover secret cafes and coffee places around the world. So it's called secretcafes.worldwide. And that's the Instagram name, so you can just search that and access that. And then I have a blog called ellieka.travel, blogspot, I think, A-T. And there you can find some of my travel writings. And a lot of I actually upload a lot of my poetry on there as well. So now it's more like a travel/literature blog. So you
Sounds
can also
great.
Write that one. Yeah.
I'll put that in the show notes too.
Sounds really cool.
Yeah,
cool cafe houses all over the world.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can always, you can as usual, you can find me on Twitter at Leo Engelmeyer. This was episode 10 of the Universe podcast. If you enjoyed it and would like to hear more of us, make sure to subscribe to the Universe podcast wherever you're listening to it. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review and tell us what you think to help other people find the podcast. And please tell all your friends about it. Comments? Questions? You can reach us on Twitter, we're at PodUniverse. On Facebook, or via our email address, podcast@universe.univ.org. This podcast was edited and hosted by Leonhard Engelmeyer. The co-host was Elivnaz Kabalji. Our guest on this episode was Elisabeth Arschlager. I hope you visit this planet in the universe again. In the meantime, stay safe in space. Thank you for listening.